Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Dual Screens Podcast. This is a show where we bring on industry guests, video game industry guests, to give us their story and talk about their project and all that fun stuff. And I am one of your hosts, Stephen Fontana, and with me, as always, he is Andy Esimakis. How are you, Andy?
Well, I'm watching my one-year-old pup who turned one yesterday.
Oh, happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Cujo. He's playing with a stuffed taco, but I have no idea where it came from.
Interesting. The mystery of the stuffed taco.
Yes. Could go for a real taco right about now.
We're going to have to figure this out. Sure. By the end of the show, I want answers, Andy. I want answers. With us is a returning guest. It's been over 2 years, I believe, since the last time Laurent was on the show. But Laurent Mercure, you are the marketing monkey and community papa at Chains Awesome Games. You guys recently released Night Squad, a multiplayer friendship-destroying video game for the Nintendo Switch. And, of course, the first time you were on, you came to talk about After Charge. Laurent, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah.
You got a description just right.
Perfect. We did it. So
how you been? Research podcast.
I've been good. It's been a weird year since we released Aftercharge in 2019. So we switched things around. We started working on something new, and then while working on something new, we said, "Hey, we got that game, Night Squad. We released in 2015. What about putting it on the Nintendo Switch for a try?" So that's what we did.
Awesome. So, listeners, as I said at the top of the show, this is the Dual Screens Podcast. This is an interview show where we bring on industry guests from the video game industry to tell us their story, whether it be a programmer, a director, PR, a voice actor, a writer, it doesn't matter. They all have stories to tell, and we want to be the platform for them to tell their stories. This show will post each and every Thursday for your listening pleasure on your podcast service of choice, including our home, podbean.com. We're also on iHeartRadio, we're on Spotify, we're on Apple Podcasts, we're on Google Play, we're on everything, ladies and gentlemen. And of course, you can find us on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/DualScreensTV. But yeah, let's just jump right in. Let's jump right into this thing. So Aftercharge comes out last year. It was a ton of fun. I think you were also a Game Pass game or something on Xbox at the time. I mean, people were playing it. It was a thing. So obviously, you like you just said, you're working on another project, and you went back into the well to see what else you can dig up and maybe, you know, make a couple bucks. I'm sure that was the goal. Obviously, was the success of Aftercharge one of the main reasons why you decided to have Night Squad come out on Switch? You know, kind of you guys made a little name for yourself with Aftercharge. Maybe just kind of ride that momentum. Was that part of the decision making?
Not exactly. I think it was more Aftercharge didn't really make a name for ourselves. It was mostly Night Squad that did. The original Night Squad that we released in 2015 is still, to this day, doing really well on Xbox One. And it kind of made us think, oh, this game that we have there, that we've always kind of dreamed of putting it on a different platform, but we couldn't at the time. There was only, well, there was the Wii U, but that wasn't very good. So we didn't really look into Wii U that much, and the PlayStation 4 isn't supporting of 8 players. So it's really at the core of the Night Squad brand. So when the Nintendo Switch was announced, we were right in the middle of developing Aftercharge. We were way too busy to spend a few months working on the Night Squad port. So that idea like flew out of our mind. But then it came back. When we released Aftercharge, it didn't quite get the success we hoped it would. On Xbox One and PC, we worked really hard on having this game lift, but releasing a competitive online multiplayer game is hell. It was way too ambitious for the studio of our size. So after a few months, I think around July or August of last year, we kind of said, okay, we need to start working on something different. We can't only rely on Aftercharge for our revenues. So we started working on something different. But while working on that, we wondered, why? Well, that would be a great time to make that Night Squad port. And there we are today. It released last Friday, and it's really exciting. It's our first game on the Nintendo Switch. We've never released on that platform. We've only had, in terms of console, our only experience it with the Xbox One. So it's very experimental, launching on a new platform. We have no idea what to expect, and for now, it's going great.
Go ahead, Andy. Where are you? Oh, did you leave? Uh-oh. I think Andy
No, I was on mute for a second.
Oh, I'm sorry.
My apologies. Someone rang my doorbell a second ago.
This happens.
That's the tropes of or the traps of recording from your home during the day.
So I do want to ask you. You said recently on Twitter that you released a game on the Nintendo platform, and it was like a childhood dream coming true.
Yeah, of course.
Go. Why was that a dream come true for you guys? Expound on that a little bit.
Well, it was for me, but for the studio as well. We've all grew up with Nintendo games. No one at the studio were Sega people back in when we were younger. we're all Nintendo game players. So it's in that sense, very very personally, it was fun to finally have a game on that platform. I did work on another game before joining Chaos Hossa Games. When I worked at Freema Studio, we worked on Chariot, and Chariot ended up being on the Wii U. But still, it was the first game that I really worked on putting all the efforts, the marketing efforts, and working directly with the folks at Nintendo. It was a really good experience. I loved it. It was a gift for my child, my inner child. And in terms of a move for the studio, we've always felt that Night Squad was a great game for the Nintendo platform because it's very family friendly. It's oriented, like its philosophy behind Night Squad is that since you need 8 players to jump in, let's make the game very easy and accessible for all people if you wish to ever get 8 players to play at the same time. So it was a natural fit, a very natural fit for us.
Yeah, I think it was my idea too. I think when you were last on the podcast, that was hounding you to get this game on the Nintendo Switch. And you were like, well, I don't know. We're not sure about that.
Yeah, the reason mostly was we were too busy with After Charge. But we know it would have been a great move. We should have done that earlier, and that everyone at the studio agree. We were too focused on something else, and it's completely out of my hands. I'm just a marketing guy. It's the one of the first things I said when the Switch was announced was, should we port it to the Nintendo Switch? And like the answers were mostly no. We're just way too busy. It's going to delay a lot of things going on After Charge. So let's just wait.
Okay.
And now you're like, I told you so. You
sound a bit. Just a bit. but it's still a good timing because, like I've said earlier, and this is kind of a tease, but there's nothing full away to that teaser. We've announced a few places that we're working on a new game, and it's planned to be releasing this year. So having another game launch right now is a good time to kind of put our name back in the public space, like, hey, we're Chainsaw Some Games. We're working on something different. But here is Night Squad on the Switch.
Yeah, just like, this is why you still love us. So here's our game that you all fell in love with.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now for Switch.
We still have a lot of players on Xbox One. It's still crazy. It's crazy.
So I guess After Charge is kind of a cautionary tale for the smaller size development teams because competitive online gaming is a huge, huge market. I mean, there's always going to be corners of that market that you can kind of like put a little foothold in and all that stuff. But it seems like that is really a a piece of the pie that should be reserved for the larger dogs, as it were, like, because you constantly have to be updating. You constantly have to be keeping on top of things. You can't leave things stagnant for too long, because then player base gets bored and walks away. You have to constantly communicate with your player base. So can you go a little bit into, like, maybe there are other developers out there. Maybe there's a solo dev out there that's like, oh, I have this idea for a competitive, you know, online, you know, shooting game. What are some of the pratfalls of developing like that with a smaller size studio?
I think the number one problem, and this is also affecting huge studio. We take, for example, there are a few examples, but there's one that's going on right now. There's this online competitive game made by an Amazon studio that's called The Crucible. The Crucible? I don't know if you ever pronounced it.
Yeah, The Crucible, yep.
It's not going well. And if a studio like Amazon is struggling to get a piece of that pie, it's because it's almost impossible. I'd say that the biggest reason is just that all of the, on the contrary of other types of games, your competitors are still investing money.
Right.
They don't have a game that they've released it and now it's available, and then like consumers are going to look at the two products and say, oh, I'm going to choose between A or B. Now it's there. There's all of the competitors are also tugging the arms of the players. Like, no, you come back to our game. You come back to our game. Okay, we have something new. And then they're always trying to pull players from one place or the other. And they're constantly doing that. They don't have a choice because most of these games are free to play. So I think that the issue number one is you got to have a humongous marketing budget, because you're going to keep investing in not only content, but also advertising. Get those players back in the game all the time. And that is something I believe a solo studio, and most importantly, a self-publishing solo studio like ours, is something we couldn't match.
Yeah, I think the biggest cautionary tale, though, Stephen, was Lawbreakers.
Yeah, that's a huge one.
When it came to that realm, to that genre.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's kind of why I was asking, is because, like, I mean, you do hear the Cinderella stories, like a person who makes a mod to a game, all of a sudden that mod becomes bigger than the game it was modded from, and like a PUBG, or I even think Dota was a mod. Like, you get things like that and you're like, oh, wow, I want to do that. I have ideas. And then you don't realize, like, there are a lot of things that you can't, that you don't account for until they're slapping you in the face. You know, I remember, you know, sitting down, playing After Charge and just kind of talking with some of the community, like doing community game nights. And it's like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if we could do a you know, this thing? And then not realizing that one thing that we think would be cool that we found in another game or whatever, like, would spiral the game out of control. Like, everything kind of affects everything else. It's not as simple as just updating and piling things on top, because other things get affected. And we see that with when we have guests on that talk about, you know, single player games, that if you change one thing back here, it could change everything up here and like all this other stuff. But I can't imagine a you know, multiplayer competitive game, all the systems that have to talk to each other, the balancing that goes into everything. Like, I can't imagine what that would be like. I feel like you would have to almost double the size of your studio and have people in it, you know, an entire studio the size of the studio of the crew that made the game staying on it and updating it and keeping it going, while another crew splits off and works on another project. I mean, at least that's how I envisioned something like that even standing a chance. Was there any conversations within the studio of trying to keep After Charge going and getting it updated with a, you know, maybe hiring or you know, or was it just, hey, we did what we did, it's time to back away, let's focus on something else that's going to get an influx of cash into the studio?
Well, we gave it I'd say we gave it two tries. There were two pieces of content that we wanted to push. So we had two major updates to After Charge, and each of these times, I've tried very hard to get visibility for the game through influencers, paid influencers, and also free weekends on Steam, and this always gave us spikes of players, but then they left. They had some other games to play. And the game being free for a game like ours isn't such a big deal, because other games in our space are mostly free. So I think one of the it's tied to my first point, but I also think that to have any chance in this space, you need to be free to play, which we weren't not, because we couldn't take that chance of having a game that's free to play, and then if revenue isn't coming in, you have a huge problem ahead of you. You might have more players. That's all fine. That's the community asked for the game to turn free to play the second we were missing players. And I was like, oh, okay, this is more complicated than you think. We have server costs to pay for, and it wouldn't mean that players would stick around longer. It just means that there will be a bigger influx of players every day. But if our current players are stopping after a week of playing, free to play isn't going to change that. So other bigger systems needed to be changed inside the game, but that requires a lot of time. And when you're releasing a competitive online game, you don't have a lot of time. You have to figure this thing out and fix it so quickly that your player base doesn't have time to leave, which is so much quicker than a 10 people studio could do, like us.
Yeah, and I feel like if you look at games like Overwatch, for example, that player base is just so loyal. Like, a lot of those folks playing that game only play that game and nothing else.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
My fiance, he only plays Overwatch. Like, he loves just that one game, and to have another option is not even in his thinking. Like, mm-hmm. This is all I have for this kind of gameplay, and everything else kind of falls away.
Exactly, and I think it comes with the... I think I'm never going to be using the game the word competitive in describing a game that we make, because that comes with a mindset. If you're playing a competitive game, the idea is to be the best at it. And if you want to be playing, if you play, for example, Overwatch is a great example. That's a game we know. We felt like Overwatch players could like Aftercharge. They have. There's a good chance that Overwatch players will like Aftercharge. It's one of our comparables, but on a very, very smaller scale. But if they stop playing Overwatch, they stop practicing Overwatch. So exactly. they're not going to be, they're going to feel like they're missing out on practicing Overwatch to play Aftercharge. And why play Aftercharge if, like, not a lot of people are playing Aftercharge, so they would be spending time practicing. There's always this feeling of practicing in a competitive game. They would be practicing a game that is in hype right now. It's not trendy, so why spend time on that? So there's fun, but there's also practice when you talk about a competitive game. And that, I think, just even though the game itself in its core, there was a lot of competitive potential. I believe in that. But like marketing it as such might have been a small mistake that we've made. It was people didn't view it as a game you could just play casually, because people got super good at Aftercharge and wrecked people. Everyone that came that were new, they wrecked them because they had a lot of practice. And then that's... like one of the factors, many, many factors that kind of killed its chances.
So let's switch gears over to Night Squad. So Night Squad is also competitive in its own right, but it's really only competing to try and ruin your friendships with your friends. Because now, you know, we're switching gears. We're not getting to a... this is more of a party competitive atmosphere. This is going to be like a Towerfall or a Duck game or something like that. So why don't you give our listeners who don't know what Night Quest is Night Quest is another game that I was playing last year. Tell our listeners what is Night Squad.
So Night Squad is an 8-player arcade inspired multiplayer game that's reminiscent of Bomberman and like the really old school gauntlet. So it's top down. Every player picks a knight, and it's basically up to which game modes you choose what you'll be doing. So, for example, you can play a mode that's Capture the Grail. That's like our classic. So there's a grail sitting in the middle of the map. All eight knights needs to get it. So you just go at it, and you kill all the other knights, and you get the grail back to your base. It's extremely simple to play. You just move around and hit with your sword. But there's a lot of depth to it, as you can pick up a ton of power-ups, such as there's a bow and arrow, a shield, a horse, but there's also laser guns, and there's a ripper. It's actually a gun that shoots saws. So there's a lot of stupid weaponry you can pick up, and it makes for multiplayer madness. It's just fun times with your friend. I wouldn't say it's competitive. You can make it competitive, but there's a lot of things in Night Squad that aren't made to be super fair by design, because it's more fun like that. For example, it's my kind of game. Yeah, exactly. So sometimes some items are really not fair. They're just too good. But it's just part of the fun. It's more chaotic than competitive, I'd say. So comparing it to Towerfall is we know there's a lot of similarities between Towerfall and Night Squad. There's also the concept that it's one hit kill. There's no HP in Night Squad. You get hit by your enemy, you're dead. That's it. But that's okay. You'll be spawning a few seconds later. Like I said earlier, there's a lot of game modes. Capture the Grail is just one. There's Capture the Flag. You can play soccer. There's Gladiator. There's Juggernaut. You can pick up a minigun, and then the player that gets the minigun just wrecks every other player unless someone actually managed to kill the Juggernaut and picks up the minigun, and then it continues. There are also team modes, like Capture the Flag, Domination. Soccer is an example of team games. So you can actually have some kind of co-op feeling if you want to play a team game together. But there's a lot of things to do. And in the Nintendo Switch version, we've included there was a DLC on PC and Xbox One. We just added that DLC content straight into the Nintendo Switch version. So there's four more game modes and three more knights to pick up.
I like how for someone like me, it requires little skill or practice to be good at this game. like most things in my life.
Just smash the button and see what happens.
And just pray that I win. It's also accessible to like having a game night when you have friends come over who don't play games often. They just see, well, grab a controller. It's very simple, and you might win, and you'll get you get to brag.
It's definitely what you've described. It's very on purpose. It's are you still there?
Oh yeah, we're here.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, it was my screen just stopped. So I was wondering if my computer stopped. So it's very on purpose. It's exactly what we were aiming for. It's a party game that supports up to 8 players. So you gotta make sure that all these 8 players can jump in, even if they've never played. When we went to conventions with Night Squad around the time it released on Xbox One, our pitch was very simple: grab a controller, just get that grail, and then people figure out how to move. It's very simple. It's top down. It's the simplest controller you can ever have. It's just if you push up, your character goes up. If you push down, it goes down. It's even simpler than a platformer. So everyone gets it. Even a 5-year-old can pick up a controller and understand how to move in Night Squad. And then you have one other button. Press any of the other button and it's going to strike with your sword. That's it. So really, anyone can pick up Night Squad and have some kind of some amount of fun. If you hand the controller to I don't know, a 65-year-old who has never played a video game, they're probably gonna have fun just because they're able to move the knight and they're like, oh, this is so fun. Then that's it. As long as they have fun, we're good. We're winning.
So does this kind of ignite a spark within Chains Awesome to like maybe support this even more now? Like I'm sure Switch has kind of breathed a new life into the IP. Is this something that you guys are gonna, you know, focus your efforts on outside of the other project that you have working? Is this kind of a one and done? All right, it's ported, it's done, it's good. You know, let's move on.
We'll see. Like I said, it's experimental. We know that from the experience that we've had with Aftercharge, we know that, and looking at how Night Squad performed, we know that this is the kind of game that we need to be doing. And it's already kind of the same kind that we're doing with our next game. So we're going into that direction. What the port of Night Squad on the Nintendo Switch is going to teach us is, are we... can we be successful on the Switch as well? And is it a platform we should consider for our next title and in the future? And yeah, if there's still a huge success going on with Night Squad, maybe we could make another game that's similar to that. Maybe a Night Squad 2, I don't know.
I know it's only been about a week or so, but how has the reception been like for Night Squad on the Switch?
It's been good. What surprised me the most is the amount of love we've got from the Xbox community when we announced it. Like, oh, I've used, like, it's kind of reminded them that the game existed. Like, whoa, I played this on Xbox One, so it was so good, I'm gonna get it on the Switch. Or they a lot of people started their comment by saying they've played it a bunch on Xbox One, they're glad to see it coming on Switch, and that's it. So we thought we were going on a very different realm with the Nintendo Switch, but it looks like these communities they move from one to the other, and you don't have to be on playing only on one console. So I think we've reached a lot of old Xbox One players that are now on Nintendo Switch. They're like, I'm gonna get this game as well. Another reason why it's experimental for us, we've always been scared of demos. Historically, Chains Awesome Games doesn't do demo because we've done that in the past and it was a problem. Our very, very first game, Beat Blaster 3, that we were launched on Steam, had a demo and it kind of killed the game. Mm-hmm. But we've heard really good things about demos on the Nintendo Switch, how it converts and how it kind of adds people to the pool of your community anyway, when you push out news, all of these systems that we didn't know existed. So we figured out, okay, let's do it. We know that Night Squad has success. Night Squad is a good game. It's objectively a good game. It adds success on Xbox One. So what? Let's try it. Let's do a demo. So there's the demo on Nintendo Switch that's available, and those numbers are really big. So we got a lot of downloads of demos. So we are very excited to see if it's going to convert at some point into sales. We're going to be looking at that very very carefully to see if that was a good move. But for now, it's we didn't have a lot of expectations because it's a five-year-old game that we're putting on the platform with no like additional content. It's a port that includes the DLC. So it's not like a major news and we're not expecting a lot from it. But for now, it's doing pretty good. Pretty like what we've expected.
For someone who, you know, basically gamed for most of this generation just on PS4, you know, and I only just recently got a PC that I play on, I didn't know this game was a thing until it was announced to be on Switch. And I'm like, oh, this looks great. And then Andy was like, yeah, this is an older game. You know, this is the game I was talking about, you know, whatever, a couple years ago. But it completely avoided my radar. And I imagine I'm not the only one that this will happen to. Because Switch, something magical happens on Switch, especially for these smaller party style games. They just seem to really find a foothold over there, regardless of the oversaturation that you may find in the genre. So I'm very interested to see what those look like, what those conversions look like for you as well. But as far as when you had mentioned that you were surprised that a lot of the Xbox players were gonna, you know, saying that they're gonna pick it up on Switch, you know, Xbox didn't necessarily have the greatest generation this generation. So I think a lot of Xbox owners and even PS4 owners, the Switch is there and also console at this point. So, you know, finding a home on that for these smaller bite size, you know, like maybe not their 1080p or 4K 30 frames per second blockbusters, the Switch kind of became the home for those. So, you know, I'm also very, very interested to see how this game does in its second life. And that's essentially what this is. This is Night Squad's second chance here. It's its second life. Even though, you know, and it did well, as you said, in its first iteration. So, this should be interesting. So I wish you all the luck in the world.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Second life. It's a good way to put it. Mm-hmm. It's really, while we have it, a lot of people that said they played on Xbox One, a lot of people are discovering the game right now, and they're judging it exactly like if it was a new game. And we're getting good comments on that. And I feel like a big strength of the Nintendo Switch for party games and multiplayer games like that is that everyone has at least two controllers.
Right.
That I think it makes a huge difference. I feel like a lot of people that are playing on Xbox One and PlayStation 4, for example, well, at the base, you only have one controller. So when you buy the console, if you're not too much into local multiplayer games, well, you're really not going to buy any because you don't have a controller. You're not going to buy a controller for that one local multiplayer game. It's going to take a lot for you to purchase that other controller. While on the Nintendo Switch, at least you already have two, so it's a start. It's perfect for local multiplayer games in that sense.
Yeah, and I could see Xbox owners telling their friends who only own a Switch, "You have to buy this game, mm-hmm. and I'll buy it as well for the Switch." So you have that word of mouth happening, because I feel this is like the game where having it in your hands while you're in bed late at night and playing with your friends online is like the perfect scenario.
So I want to switch gears a little bit, and I hope you don't mind coming on the ride with us here. Next gen is upon us. Obviously, we're not going to be asking you, you know, like what you guys are working on for next gen. But
Night Squad 2 for PS5.
Night Squad
2
and PS5 confirmed. Yes.
Is happening.
But no, we really like to just get your thoughts on what the big two companies here, the Microsoft and PlayStation, or Xbox and PlayStation brands, what they're setting up for next gen. Just kind of get your thoughts on that, and like what's been the overall consensus at the studio. I mean, you guys have a history working with Microsoft, almost, you know, in a somewhat exclusive realm there. So what would have been what's been the word around the studio?
Well, of course, you've mentioned it, and it's huge. Our bias towards Microsoft, because we've worked with them, we know them well, and our game has seen success on the Xbox One. So there's really a big bias there. But our general reaction is that we still don't know a lot, and for what we've seen, there's like two approach. There's an approach that the platform is everything, that the machine itself drives the games. For like in the case of PlayStation 5, if you don't have the PlayStation 5, you can't experience anything that's new. You need the machine. And in terms of so it's gonna probably make games that are more breathtaking and extremely sophisticated, and like it's gonna be a true next generation going into the PlayStation 5, right now when they launch. And in terms of what Xbox is doing, it's going to be, I think maybe it's going to take a longer time to get a catalog that's going to be of games that's going to be similar to what you see on PlayStation 5. But at least the platform is, the machine isn't everything. There are going to be a lot of great games that will be coming out around the time of the Xbox Series X, but you can also play them on your Xbox One. It's not going to look as impressive, but like I'm going to go in very personal territory. Who cares? I'm not a visual guy. I don't, even though I play a lot of games on PC, I don't really care if there's like updated, super updated graphics and realism. That's not getting to me at all. And us as a studio, of course, not either, because we're not going in that sort of visual style. So we can make our games look great, even if the machine isn't a beast. So of course, in for us, we're more looking at what Microsoft is doing. But we have conversation with Sony as well. We have a contact there, and we keep updated on what we're doing and if it would be a good fit for them. But it goes in the two senses. Not only do we have an experience with Microsoft, but Microsoft have an experience with us. They know us. They know we can deliver, and what we make are usually good games. So they're more open to giving us information on what they're doing and they see our game going on their platform first. So I'd say that's our current situation right now. But I'm really excited to get to know more about the PlayStation 5 and the Series X. What's that stuff? It's still vague. It's a new machine, but it runs mostly the same games, other than some new games that will work better on that Series X, but no games will be that's what I understood. No games that will be releasing with the Series X will be exclusive to the Series X, though, so you will be able to play it on the Xbox One.
Yeah,
correct. At least for the first 2 years, at least.
Yeah, the first, I think they said 18 months was like their window for that. So do you think that's going to hurt innovation in the Xbox library? Like, do you think that is going to be like holding back developers from doing truly innovative things with the hardware, just because of the nature of it needing to run on current gen, whereas on the Sony side, like third party, yeah, they're going to still have to worry about previous gen stuff, but maybe they lean a little bit more towards the PlayStation architecture, the you know, what they're doing to cut down on load times and texture pop and like all that fun stuff. What do you think? Do you think that it's going to hold Xbox back for launch?
I don't think so. It innovation doesn't require horsepower.
Mm-hmm.
You can make truly innovative games without them being extremely demanding on the machine. So I don't think so. I think PlayStation 5, Sony is doing the right move for them. They know that they have, to what I understand, the gamers that are more loyal, and they expect like absolute next gen. They want something that's like amazing looking, and they want usually, I would say, bigger games. I don't know if that's a good term. And they're going big. They wanted that. They're doing the true next gen. Xbox, their Series X isn't really next gen. It's just, it's a more powerful Xbox X. That Xbox One X is like an Xbox One X 2.
Right.
The following.
Yeah.
But what Xbox gamers really like is the backward compatibility. So all of these games that can be played no matter what platform, what that machine you have. So I think that's good. That's a good move for their crowd. They each know their crowd well. And what Microsoft is trying to do as well is to have games that are PC as well, and they try to get on that space. I wonder how that's going to be maybe integrated on with the Xbox Series X. Like, if they can, I don't know, games that you can play on both your PC and your Series X seamlessly. I don't know.
See, when you mention things like innovation and not needing to have the most powerful or the best looking graphics, but that's all that Microsoft markets is, just we have the most powerful this, it's the best looking this. They put such a huge emphasis on that one part of their console. I feel like most gamers aren't really about fidelity of graphics and or the resolution or the frames per second. I feel that's, it's nice to have it as a talking point, but I just feel like a lot of gamers, but are the games good? Are the games new and innovating in some other way besides how they look? Because I think going into next gen, it's a given, things are going to look better.
Yeah, true.
That's agree. How it's going to be.
It's not I think it's maybe the marketing move they can do for now, because they don't have it. They don't have anything to show yet.
Right.
But of course, it's going to be harder for them to move units. Mm-hmm. But that's the appeal of exclusives. So if PlayStation 5 has a lot of, well, Sony has a lot of exclusives in their pockets, and they also make a console that will run only PlayStation 5 games. So they're going to be moving more machines. I guess Microsoft is planning to boost their revenues in a different different way. So we'll have to see.
Well, I mean, Game Pass was born from that. Like, just having a different revenue stream for them, yeah.
Is still awesome. I hope that Game Pass is doing great for them. I know that for players, it's
really awesome. I mean, it's great for us.
It's great for us, and it's great. I feel like it's great for small developers like us as well. So I hope it's going well for them as well, and they're going to be keeping adding to that catalog. Because for me personally, I'm a very, very busy guy. I work in video games, but I also have three kids, and I'm super busy. So I don't really have a lot of gaming time for myself. I game a lot with my kids, but I don't game a lot for myself. So when I want to purchase a game, I'm going to probably purchase my Nintendo Switch games. Like first party Nintendo games, because I'm absolutely sure they're going to be amazing, and some few indie games that I know. But when it comes to other games, PC and Xbox, I look at Game Pass. I approach that really in a very Netflix way. Like, I would like to try something new. Let's see what I got, what I already own. And I look for games in that. I just recently did that thing of, okay, which game am I going to play? And I found that the Street of Rage 4 is on Game Pass PC.
Yep.
So I'm going to play it. That's going to be a new game. I spent $0 on that. Woo!
Man.
So if I don't like it, I'm just going to stop and play another game.
Yeah, it's a simple, you know, get in, get out. Okay, what do we got? Okay, I have this. Oh yeah, I heard good things about this. Let me try that. And that's exactly what I feel like Microsoft's whole plan is make a box that makes all of those things look and run better, sure, but make sure everything can be touched by everybody. Like that, just, you know, oh, I have something that runs Xbox. I have Xbox Game Pass on my computer. Great. Now you have Xbox games. Here is what you can do. Give us your money. Here's our catalog. Every once in a while, something's not going to be, you know, in for this subscription base. You might buy something great that's revenue for us too. Now, you know, your PC's outdated. Do you want to spend $400 on a new CPU and $150 on RAM, or you know, a new CPU? Do you want to invest $700 in upgrading your PC, or do you want our Series X, which is going to run everything at its beautiful as it could possibly be? And I think you know, consoles are always the cheaper option when it comes to gaming like that. Like PC gaming, you know, a mid-range PC game is still going to be 50% more than your most expensive console on the market. So, you know, it's really the option for the people who don't have $1,000 to spend on a machine to run these games. And they have that option to spend $400 or $500 and get, you know, or even $300, get the Xbox One, and they're not going to be left out. They're going to be able to play everything that is coming out in the next couple of years, at least till 2022, you know? So I think that for them, that's a good strategy for what they were doing, especially because they got so far behind on first-party support that they needed to double down on third-party and say, no, we want to be the place where you play all these other games, and here's why you should play them with us. But I digress. We'll see.
Yeah, it's probably the strategy. Yeah.
We'll see what happens with this PlayStation thing. We're going to see some games. It's going to be out as of this recording. As of this show going live. So hopefully, listeners, you know more than we do right now.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
Time travel.
Tell us.
You guys know everything. Hit us up. All right, so we're going to switch gears here. We're going to get to the last segment of the show, which is going to be a rapid-fire questions where we're just going to ask you a bunch of stuff, and you're going to tell us the answers off the top of your head, Laurent. It's going to be fun. But before I do that, I want to tell you about our other shows here on the Dual Screens Podcast Network. That's right. This is a network. This is one channel. We have one channel. That one channel has multiple shows. Those shows are this show you're listening to, Dual Screens Podcast. Very simple. But we also do a game news show called Dual Screens Gamescast. And that posts each and every Monday for your listening pleasure on this very same channel. But we also record it live on twitch.tv/dualscreensstreams every Sunday night. And then it'll post on Tuesday as a YouTube version of the show. So again, give us your subscription over on YouTube, youtube.com/dualscreensTV, if you want to watch it a couple days later. But you could also watch it if you have a Twitch account or you want to just hang out as a guest, you can do that. twitch.tv/dualscreenstreams. And also we have a seasonal show, which I have two guest moderators lined up. I just cannot nail down a time to record the shows, but as soon as we record them, I will put them up. They go up usually on Friday, every other Friday. We did miss this last Friday just because they were scheduling conflicts, but they'll be back up. And that's Dual Screens Versus. That's a show where Andy and I debate random topics from video games, movies, television, and any other pop culture that the guest moderator wants to bring our way. We're going to have MC Fixer as a guest moderator, and we're also going to have Snowbike Mike as a guest moderator. Those are two guest mods that are going to come on the show very soon. Again, if you're listening to any of these shows on Apple Podcasts, please give us a review and leave some comments for us to read in there. That'd be great. I'm going to check what we got in there right now. But Andy, do you have any guests for Dual Screens Podcast for next week lined up yet?
We have two that are awaiting confirmation.
Sweet.
So I can't announce that just yet.
All right. We have no new reviews as of right now. But yeah, thank you very much. And again, if you want to support us on Patreon, you could do so. We are at patreon.com/NDS podcast, just like our Patreon producer, Colton, the Apprentice Nestler, does each and every month. We cannot continue to grow without all of your support. We do appreciate it. Remember that $1 gets you into our VIP Discord where you can hang out with us and other indie dev guests, that we've had on the show. And you also get a bonus episode every month in which you vote the topic of that show. All right, now it is time to get back into the show. It is time for rapid fire questions. Andy.
Oh, baby.
Start us off.
Pineapple on pizza, yes or no?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Yeah. You need to try it. It's good.
No hesitation right there. No hesitation. I like it.
Well, I've tried it. Well, I've tried it, all right.
Hawaiian pizza.
You're eating hot wings, blue cheese or ranch?
I'm more of a ranch guy, but this is not something we have in Canada. We have for hot wings, it's usually not in the options, and definitely not blue cheese. We don't have that.
So what is your option?
Usually I have mustard.
All right. Now you're just committing treason.
We do
on this guest
barbecue. Buffalo. Buffalo is a thing, right?
Well, you don't have that? I'm talking about like what you're dipping your wings in. Like you get your hot wings, you got to dip it in something.
Not necessarily.
Oh man, I'm learning a lot about Canadians.
Would you rather eat no candy on Halloween or no turkey on Thanksgiving?
Again, Canadian here, turkey isn't a big of a deal for our Thanksgiving. So I'm gonna go for a no turkey on Thanksgiving.
I don't eat candy.
There's nothing at stake for you. That's why you said it.
For now, what's your equivalent
of a Thanksgiving, and what do you eat on that day?
We have a Thanksgiving as well. It's mm-hmm. got the same name. It's just I don't think it's celebrating something.
What's the signature dish on your Thanksgiving?
But that's the thing. There's no signature dish. It's just you. You eat a great meal with your family, and that's pretty much it. You get
it's
2 days
all
off.
Backwards up there.
It's sounding more and more like Canada's very un-American, and I don't know how
it sounds
I feel
like a hellscape. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, it's early. It's a very different timing as well. It's early October. I don't know why it has the same name, to be honest. It's really not the same thing. It's in early October, and it's you get 2 days off for that. Hooray!
Sure.
And you just eat with your you have a good family meal. That's it's a good reason to see the family. Mm-hmm. But that's it. There's not a lot going on around it. That's why there's a confusion. It's why it has the same name.
Hmm. Who's your favorite superhero?
I'm gonna go with Batman. Batman is. I've been a fan of the Batman movies since I was a kid. So I like the very old ones. Even when they got ridiculous as a kid, I liked them anyway. Even with Mr. Freeze. And then, of course, I love the Dark Knight saga. Great movies from Nolan. I'm not a big fan of the DCU, so I don't have a really great opinion right now. What's the current state of Batman in movies? But like, I cannot say other names than Batman. It's been. Since I've been a kid, it's a great superhero. Hmm.
Do you miss E3?
Yes, greatly. I miss E3 because it would have been my fourth or fifth E3 going there, and always a great time. There's a lot of big announcements, or people are all excited. Everyone is excited about video games, and then on the side of that. We, as people of the industry, we have a lot of people to meet and talk about what we're working on. And it's just a very exciting week. And it's fun to spend some time in LA. I'll miss that this year. Hoping it's going to come back next year, but we don't know. Because right now, it's been good for indie developers to have no E3. Because there have been so much great visibility opportunity here and there from all the places. There's a ton of live events where you can present your game. There's one going on this weekend. It's called Guerrilla Collective. There's like 70 games presented there. So for small indie developers, it's even better than E3 because you don't get any visibility when you're very, very small. Mm-hmm. So I miss going to E3 a lot, but I think that this like online only version of E3 has its strength.
Would you rather have to wear a winter coat all year round, all the time, or a Speedo all year round, all the time?
Well, that's a tough question. That one is really tough. I guess it's going to be the winter coat. Yeah, I wouldn't be comfortable, especially here in Canada, in a Speedo when it's minus 40 Celsius outside.
What if it was a Canadian goose down Speedo?
No, still not. That's a question. I will answer your question with a question. Can I wear something over my Speedo?
No.
Oh.
We gotta see the banana hammock.
Okay, so no.
Right. The judges say no. Just the Speedo.
I'm gonna be in a winter suit. It's gonna be very hot at times, but I'm gonna stay in my basement and survive.
Do you play Night Squad with your kids?
Yes, I've tried, but they're not the biggest fans, unfortunately. My older daughter, she's 5, so it's still kind of young. And then my son after that is 3 only, so he didn't get much done in Night Squad. So I've tried, but I think they might be a bit young to enjoy it.
That's the same age as my kids, so I still haven't put a controller that actually does anything into any of my kids' hands, because they play with the iPad and they play games on there, and I don't know if a controller might break their brain. I have a feeling.
Well, you can, if you have my advice on that, go if you can go for some motion controls game. My daughter is really good at Mario Kart. I'm not kidding. She's really, really good at it. She's only 5. And she can do like the cups, the 100cc cups.
Nice.
She can finish first on that because of the motion control. So motion controls is better for that age. That's fine.
Awesome.
All right, Steve, I'm gonna ship a Kinect for Jack. All right, for his next
birthday. No, I have a Switch. It's fine. We can play Mario Kart on Switch.
Mario Kart.
No,
I don't need that Mario monstrosity Kart in my house. I have enough webcams staring at me every day. Whose question is it?
I believe it's
my question. Right. Chocolate or vanilla ice cream?
Chocolate. Yeah. Hmm. I like both. Hmm. I'm a very chocolate and vanilla guy, but if I have to choose, it's going to be chocolate.
Would you rather have the power of flight or invisibility?
I would say flight. Way more useful. There's not a lot of useful things you can do with invisibility.
There's plenty of useful things. There's not a lot of like good natured things.
Use your creative brain there for a second.
That is I would really find a lot of use.
I'm sure your list just says go up, and I have a much longer list than that. What you can do with invisibility.
I said useful things. So I could go to work by flying. Mm-hmm. It would be so much easier. Flying.
Would you have to work though if you had that power?
Of course.
Flight.
Yeah, I would probably get some other jobs that require flying, and I would kick ass at it.
You'd be like Uber for the air though. Just fly people around.
I would be rich. I would be rich.
I guess. I mean,
you can't get rich by being invisible.
Again, well, you're not being creative.
You can if you're a thief.
That's not. Yeah, we're not talking about morality. We're talking about if you can be wealthy.
Sure. Sure. You
but
can.
Being invisible doesn't mean you can go through walls. It's not going to get you inside a bank.
Well, if they open the vault and you're just standing there, you could just walk in and then wait till they open it up again.
Like if your gold bar's out. Isn't that what happens?
They have gold bars. They're not going to go invisible though.
No, you just put them in one of those sacks that has the big dollar sign on it.
Right.
And these sacks, they will fly.
Sure.
They will look like they fly out, but because they won't turn invisible.
You could eat it.
Oh,
okay. You could shove it in your ass.
Oh, okay, maybe that works.
You just shove a gold bar in your ass and just walk.
It's probably not fun.
I mean, it could take as long as you want. You're invisible. As long as you don't have an accident, you're good.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. All right, we're going to get to the final question here as we wrap up the show. This is a very important question. This is the biggest question that you'll ever be asked in your entire career, and that is no hyperbole. Okay, now I hope you're sitting, and I hope that you have your thinking cap on. It's a very important question.
Okay.
Andy or Steven?
That's a very tough one.
It is.
It is.
For many reasons.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are right there.
Right.
We like to put our list, our viewer, our guests on the spot, listeners, viewers, whatever. We like to put them on, put you guys on the spot, and we're keeping tabs. And I'm pretty sure I have a very, very, very sizable lead. So if you feel sorry and you want to give Andy some love here to give him some hope at possibly catching up, that's fine. But know that you would be joining many people in the right answer, which is me.
I'm gonna go for... I'm gonna go for Andy.
All right. Okay. Okay. Okay.
That's the right choice.
Shouldn't have said because put me on that list.
Said anything.
Listen, if you had chosen Steven, I would have said you chose the guy that called your game Night Quest. It's kind of a bad
listen,
look for you.
I played a game called the Night's Quest. Leave me alone. It happens. Anyway, thank you so much, Lauren, for joining us. It was an absolute pleasure having you on here. We got a lot of great information. We wish you nothing but luck with Night Squad on Switch. We hope that everything goes great for you guys. Maybe we'll get a little community night. We'll play with the viewers and listeners on our Twitch channel. That'd be a lot of fun. But folks, if you want to follow us on social media, we are at NDS Podcast. I am at BatChild27, and Andy is at PantsGuy. And Laurent, where could everybody find Chains Awesome and everything else?
You can find Chains Awesome on Twitter at Chainsaw Games. And myself on Twitter as well at Laura Mercure. It's just my name. It's very simple.
Indeed. Indeed. And if you want to join our Facebook group, we are facebook.com/groups/DS podcasts. If you want to follow us on Twitch, I think I did this earlier, but it's twitch.tv/dual screen streams. And if you want to follow my Twitch channel, you can do so at twitch.tv/batchild. That's where I play like the games that I want to play instead of the games that, you know, Andy and I are covering and stuff like that. But anyway, our theme song Retro Chatter is by Bradley Parsons at Train Sound Studio. Easy for me to say today. Thank you, Andrew Douglas, for all of our cartoon art. And thank you, Matt Murray, for our overlays. Again, if you want to support us on Patreon, it's patreon.com/NDS podcast. And our store is dualscreens.com/store. You can buy some t-shirts and merchandise there. That's going to do it for us. Andy, is there anything you want to tell the kids before we go?
I love you all. You're all amazing. Mm-hmm. Thank you for listening. And stay tuned for more amazing content.
Indeed. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Lauren.
Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure. And as always, please be excellent to each other.